You're listening to Sounds Good, our midday music and community conversation program. I'm Austin Carter, joined in the studio by Todd Hatton and on the phone by Bill Baxter, director of Paducah's Tillman House.
Good afternoon, Mr. Baxter. How are you?
Oh, just fine. Thank you very much for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you on. You are the director of the Lloyd Tillman House and Civil War Museum. Who was Lloyd Tillman?
Lloyd Tillman was a railroad engineer, a builder of railroads that the city of Paducah brought here to bring us our first railroad back in the 1852 time period.
And he went on to a second career after 1861, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct. He was very much a states' rights advocate, and as you know, Kentucky had declared its neutrality. Basically said, let's just kind of watch this situation a little bit. Let's not secede from the Union. But when the Union Army violated Kentucky's neutrality on a couple of egregious situations, Lloyd Tillman just said, I can no longer give my support in any way, shape, or form to the federal government in Washington. And he joined the Confederate Army in July of 1861.
And he was in command of the 3rd Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken, and soon after promoted brigadier general and headed to Fort Henry.
That is correct. Due to his building skills, he was recognized for higher command and put in charge of both Fort Henry and Donelson, mm-hmm. and told to prepare those fortifications to repel any attempts by the Union to use the Cumberland and Tennessee rivers to penetrate into the Southland.
Well, he certainly seemed to have a dim view of where Fort Henry was located.
That is correct. It seems a prior individual had sighted and set up Fort Henry right on the banks of the Tennessee River, even in view of the winter flood line, which was above the location of the fort. The general, Tillman, tried to apprise his commanders of the situation. However, let's just suffice to say, politics and politicians were involved, and he was basically given orders to just do the best he could with the situation he had.
And then the Tennessee River got him.
The Tennessee River and a little fellow by the name of Ulysses S. Grant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He would run into Grant again in 1863.
Well, troops under the command of Ulysses S. Grant, of course, when they were moving on the city of Vicksburg down in Mississippi. And his first venture did not end all that well. He ended up in prison for 9 months,
mm-hmm.
But then was traded back to the Confederacy, and then in May of 1863, in his second confrontation with troops under the command of Grant, he was not quite so fortunate. He was struck by artillery fire and died on the battlefield in May.
At the Battle of Champions Hill.
That is correct.
And he is actually buried in New York City, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, in Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx in New York City. Mrs. Tillman, Augusta Tillman, at the end of the war had moved the family back, the children back to New York City. Her aunt had just married the mayor of New York City, and she thought that would be a good place to bring the children up. It obviously was, because she was able, all of the children made successful careers as bankers and lawyers and such. Mrs. Tillman dies in New York City in 1898, and her two surviving sons, Frederick and Seidel, think that it's important that Mom and Dad be at rest together.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1901, they proceeded down to Vicksburg, to the large Confederate cemetery in which Lloyd Tillman had initially been buried. They located his remains, took him back to New York, and as you say, he is now laying in rest beside his beloved Augusta.
Well, they're also, both of them actually are, to some degree or another, remembered in Paducah. We do have, the Tillman House and Museum. We have a statue on Fountain Avenue of General Tillman.
That's correct.
And, of course, we have Paducah Tillman, which, before it was Paducah Tillman, was Augusta Tillman High School.
Absolutely correct. And that's a point that's oftentimes lost in history. But as you correctly stated, it was the two sons when they came here in 1909 to establish the wonderful statue in Lang Circle. They wanted to remember their mother, and they gave the city some money to purchase some land and to build a high school and name it in her honor. So the year for about 1911 until building of the new high school across from the Baptist Hospital in its present location, it was known as Augusta Tillman. But then the city decided they wanted to adopt or wanted to include the Paducah name. They dropped Augusta and added Paducah, and it's been lost in history that the school's really named for her.
Speaking of a bit lost to history, I suppose we should turn our attention to the subject of your presentation tomorrow night at the McCracken County Public Library. You'll be there from 6 to 8 p.m. talking about the Battle of Paducah that occurred on March 25th, 1864. I'm curious. It was a March of 25th of 1864 was a Good Friday.
It happened to have been a Good Friday. I would tell one. It was an early Easter that year, as the calendar goes, the church calendar goes, and so March 25th was Good Friday when Nathan Bedford Forrest and approximately 1,800 some raised the figure up to around 2,000 Confederate cavalrymen and mounted infantry attacked Paducah.
And I suppose it bears mentioning that leading the way into Paducah was the 3rd Kentucky again, which had been turned into a cavalry regiment, mounted infantry.
Mounted infantry, and this old Air Force officer had some trouble with that for a while. But what's the difference between cavalry and mounted infantry? They all ride horses, don't they? Yes, but it was quickly explained to me by some very adept retired Army personnel that a cavalryman remains on his horse. The mounted infantry ride the horse into battle, and once upon the scene, they dismount and become infantrymen again.
Well, the 3rd Kentucky was a local regiment.
It was an infantry regiment, and it had longed to become mounted infantry. And only when they were assigned to Nathan Bedford Forrest in early March of 1864 were their dreams coming true. But this also gave them an opportunity to come home for the first time in over 3 years of grueling warfare.
Well, I'm curious, why did General Forrest pay Paducah a visit?
Well, it was primarily because there was a large supply depot sitting right down here on the banks of the Ohio River. And in the spring of 1864, Grant and Sherman and their army were sitting down where? In Chattanooga. And what does Chattanooga sit on? The Tennessee River. What's the mouth of right here in Paducah? The Tennessee River. You put men and supplies and equipment on boats, and in a day and a half, 2 days, they're feeding Grant and Sherman's army. There was hope that Forrest, if he made this bold venture up into western Tennessee, western Kentucky, tried to disrupt that flow of supplies down to Sherman. On March 9th, you may recall, Ulysses S. Grant was tapped by Lincoln to become his commander of all the Union troops and was brought back to Washington and to Virginia to take on Lee. Sherman was left in command out here in the West. He was in Chattanooga. He was getting ready to make his move on Atlanta and then eventually his great march to the sea to Savannah. But Forrest was given the task of coming north and trying to disrupt that flow of supplies by destroying the large depot here.
It was kind of a mixed result for him. He did achieve the aim of raiding the stores, capturing horses down on the Ohio River. Not so fortunate in their action against Old Fort Anderson, which, if I'm not mistaken, it used to be where the Julian Carroll Convention Center is now.
Somewhere in that location,
right.
In a close proximity. Now, see, that's the point and you may have seen the Paducah Sun headline asking the question, who won the battle? And it always comes into contention that, Forrest was not able to to overcome the fort. In many historical resources that we have in the documents, there was never any intent. Forrest had no assumption that he was going to take Fort Anderson. He is coming very deep into Union-held territory at this late juncture in the war. That was not a goal. Capturing forts and holding territory were completely out of the picture. He knew his greatest ally was to stay on the move, hit and run as quickly as you could. And that's exactly what he did. All he wanted to do with Fort Anderson was to make sure that those nasty Yankees didn't come out of Fort Anderson and disrupt the main objective a few blocks away, which was to destroy that supply depot.
Well, the 3rd Kentucky was under a brigade commanded by a person born in Murray.
That is correct.
Colonel Albert Thompson.
Absolutely.
Who is now buried in Murray.
Yes.
And did not die particularly well. In fact, from what I understand, there's some contention over exactly who fired the cannonball, but it pardon my flippancy, but it sounds like he caught it right in the numbers.
That is one battlefield rendition of what happened, that he and his horse were struck by a canister round, which exploded and killed the horse instantly and decapitated the colonel. And yes, he was from Murray. He for 9 years prior to the war, Colonel Albert P. Thompson has served as the Commonwealth or district attorney here in Paducah. And he left in the summer of 1861 with Lloyd Tillman to join the Confederate Army. This was his first time home in 3 years of war.
Now, it was a fight that has generated no small amount of controversy simply because of what the Union forces did in Paducah after the battle and what the Confederates did after the battle as well. Stephen Hicks was in charge of Fort Anderson and actually burned a good chunk of Paducah down.
Well, following that first day of battle on Good Friday, he had no idea of what Nathan Bedford's force intentions were. They withdrew from the city that night and moved away. He did not know, was forced going to come back at first light and attempt to do more damage and possibly try to take the fort. He couldn't afford to allow Forrest and the Confederates to take occupation of those buildings that they had on the first day of battle, which they used so exceptionally well to snipe into the fort. It's estimated that 80% of the casualties of Union soldiers inside of Fort Anderson were from head wounds because of the elevated positions the Confederates had occupied those buildings surrounding Fort Anderson. And so the decision by Colonel Hicks was to put the torch to every business and every home within musket range of Fort Anderson on the second day of battle. They estimated between 50 and 60 additional homes and businesses were burned to the ground that day.
Mm. As a result, there's only two houses in Lower Town now that are antebellum homes.
That's correct. It was a quite a destructive period for the city of Paducah. And you can well imagine much of the military support for Colonel Hicks, he was outnumbered 3-1. You know, if you take the conservative estimate, 1,800 Confederates, Colonel Hicks himself only had about 600 Union soldiers here. So there's your ratio, 3-1. But he had an ace in the hole. He had two heavily armed gunboats sitting in the Ohio River, the USS Paosta and the USS Pawpaw. Now, what happens when you start levying those heavy cannon from the gunboats from the river to try to disrupt the Confederates in the city? What do? You destroy the city. And much of the waterfront near the depot, the supply depot, what we now know as the down near the Broadway entrance to the Ohio River, was destroyed. And then you add to that the devastation around Fort Anderson itself and then the subsequent burning. It was a devastating day for the city of Paducah for its one-day battle in the war.
Some historians, and I've always found this interesting, have drawn a causal link between Forrest and at Paducah and the next big action that he had, which was in at Fort Pillow down on the Mississippi River in Tennessee.
I understand.
And there, depending on which way you look at it, there was quite a bit of violence that happened at that location.
That was, and there's still a lot of contention as to what was going on. I think, you know, what you have to do, and please understand my position. I am known as the token Yankee. I'm the only Yankee in the Civil War Museum. And so you're getting a Northerner's viewpoint. And for my rendering of the facts and what I can read, and I've been trying to do it extensively to find one way or the other, the verdict is still out about what actually happened at Pillow. What I do surmise, and I think it has something to do with there was a newspaper article printed in the New York Tribune 4 days after the Battle of Paducah, and it runs the story on the military engagement here on the 25th, and it says great slaughter of Confederates. And the entire article is twisted to appear as though it was a great Union victory. And bear with me for just a moment. What I think is going on here is that here we are, we're in the third year of the war. Many Northerners are growing weary of this. They're pressing Lincoln to possibly negotiate a peace. And so they don't want anything that reeks of Confederate victories. And so the New York Tribune piece, I believe, was written. It was not factual. It was a Confederate victory here. They came to do one thing. They did it, and they left. They lost the men. But anyway, so it was a propaganda piece. And there we move now to the incident at that Pillow. And I believe there... Now you've got a great Confederate general or someone who has become very, very, very well known for his exploits on the battlefield during the Civil War. This Major General Nathan Bedford Forrest, known as That Devil, and now he and his troops are confronted against Fort Pillow, which is was manned by primarily African American units under the command of a white officer, and there were numerous casualties. And you can get back and forth to how that all transpired, and we don't have time today to get into that. but again, I think that the Northern newspapers were just ready to pounce on this as another propaganda piece. That look, you know, here we have, this is what you can expect. This is how the Confederacy or the South will treat the African Americans.
So I'm getting the impression that there'll be a lot of ground for you to cover tomorrow night at the McCracken County Public Library.
There could be.
So
and
go ahead.
Oh no, I. In tomorrow evening's venue, if the topic comes up, we'll discuss it. But that's not tomorrow. Is really to remember and discuss the Battle of Paducah. If there are questions and some discussion that we have time to get into the Pillow incident, we'll be more than happy to do that. But I would, we're really focusing on what transpired on the 25th of March of 1864.
And there is quite a bit of fertile ground there. So that is tomorrow night from 6 to 8 p.m. at the McCracken County Public Library. Bill Baxter is director of the Lloyd Tillman House and Civil War Museum. Mr. Baxter, I thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.